Sorry, due to heavy calling, we cannot complete your call at this time. Will you please hang up and try your call again later? If your call is urgent, please try again now.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
More or less.
And out in Signalland. It is Signalland, right? Out in Signalland, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
You do? Good evening.
And the reason I was confused, it still says Skype here. We got to fix that label and say Signal instead. So we've switched from Skype to Signal, and we got reports last week of the best sound that we've had in a long time. Not to, promote Signal too much, but apparently Skype wasn't all that great for an amount of time. We've had an exciting week. I just wanted to go over something, though, that I just saw come through with the New York Times. There's a lot going on at Columbia University in the last week or so. Immigration officers had arrested a prominent pro-Palestinian campus activist, and now Columbia University is gathering students and faculty from the journalism school and issuing a warning to them. And this is pretty chilling. Whether you're a college student, no matter where you are in the political spectrum, this should cause you great concern. Students who are not U.S. citizens should avoid publishing work on Gaza, Ukraine, and protests that are related to the aforementioned former classmates' arrest. That's according to Stuart Carl. He's a First Amendment lawyer and adjunct professor. With about 2 months to go before graduation, their academic accomplishments or even their freedom could be at risk if they attract the ire of the Trump administration. Columbia University. He said to the gathering in Pulitzer Hall, if you have a social media page, make sure it is not filled with commentary on the Middle East. And when a Palestinian student objected, the journalism school's dean, Jelani Cobb, was more direct about the school's inability to defend international students from federal prosecution. Mr. Cobb said, nobody can protect you. These are dangerous times. There's a lot more to the article, but, that is what is apropos to us right here, right now, and to everybody in our audience. These are dangerous times. Nobody can protect you. Now, you might say it only applies to international students. First of all, the person who was arrested was in this country completely legitimately, had a green card. Marco Rubio is now saying that nobody is entitled to a green card. The people who got a green card, I think, are entitled to a green card because they have one. But whatever, they're just throwing that out the window. In this particular case, the person, we didn't even know where the person was for days. Again, Soviet times. Basically, the person was disappeared, and they have not been allowed to speak to their lawyer. Things that we would in the past really, really raise a ruckus about, and now it's kind of normal, and we're becoming a bit hardened to it all. But these are the times we're in, and it seems every week we have something more dire to talk about. That's just one I didn't even know about an hour ago. So who knows what else we'll find out about in this next hour. Any comments on this before we move on to more dire things? Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, look, I don't disagree with Rubio in the sense that green cards can be revoked, especially if somebody commits a crime in the United States. You know, the green card can certainly be revoked, but it has to be on the basis of due process. What I think is the very, very big difference here that makes us into a rather scary situation is the fact that what is and is not a crime is being conflated with opinions and constitutionally protected activities. The First Amendment, obviously, in particular, freedom of speech. And that's scary to me. I don't agree at all with the politics of this character from Colombia who was arrested, but I don't think that America should go down the pathway of revoking the right to be in this country for people who express views that the administration may disagree. I mean, that is a terrible thing to base on viewpoint. I will also add, Emmanuel, and I should have said good afternoon as opposed to good evening, because I am in Seattle here for the ICANN meeting, so it's still the afternoon here. But one of the things that I noticed over the last couple of flights that I've had is that, you know, and I was in Denver, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, and Seattle this week for the ICANN meeting. But for the last three flights that I've been on, when I get off the flight, I go into that gangway area, when you deplane, every time now there are ICE agents waiting at the plane. When I arrived on Sunday night, there were five ICE agents waiting in that gangway for somebody to get off the plane. And it's a very scary thing when you see a show of force of Immigration and Customs and Enforcement agents and CBP right there waiting for somebody. It's weird times we're in right now.
And, you know, an effect of that, people are making themselves scarce. You may not have noticed it where you are, but in some areas, I think Corona, Queens is one example, there's a whole lot less people on the street. Because they're afraid. They're afraid of being caught up in this. Whether legitimately or illegitimately doesn't really make a difference. You know, if you're Hispanic, you're suspect. And that's kind of how we're living right now. It's incomprehensible to me that ICE agents would be able to just go onto the campus of Columbia University and grab somebody as they did. But the effects are being felt everywhere. And yes, Alex, just by seeing ICE agents all over the place, that has a chilling effect. It has a very chilling effect. And there are all kinds of ways that we haven't even imagined how this is playing out. I mean, think of how kids are in school and how, you know, they will taunt the kid that looks a little different and say they're going to send ICE agents to his home. Things like that, how that has an effect. This is what we are teaching our kids, that this is okay, that this is normal. And every week it just seems like we go further down a very dark hole.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I'll tell you, it's really unnerving when you get off a plane and you see essentially law enforcement waiting for people there. And I mean, and it wasn't just one or two. You know, there were five of them.
I would have stuck around. I would have stuck around and see what happened, you know, see what they were.
Well, I think I'm sure if I stood there and waited, they would have told me to keep moving. I thought about it. I thought about saying something to them as well. Mm-hmm. But then even that, I mean, there's a chilling effect on your ability, even I think to speak out to them, because there's so many of them and you don't know what's going to trigger them. They all have guns. They all have weapons. They have authority there. And everybody on the plane, I think, was a little bit unnerved when you walk out and you see this, but nobody said a word. Nobody said a word because it was a scary situation, and nobody wanted to attract the ire of these five armed persons.
Which is crazy to me. Why do you need five armed people when people are getting off an airplane, the one place where nobody has a gun, except for the one federal marshal that's on board. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But, you know, what you could also do next time this happens, and I guess it will happen again, you don't have to stand right next to them. Stand at the end where they have to come out at some point and see what happens when they do come out. I don't think they're going to get back on the plane. They have to come out that way and take pictures, you know, and document it. I think we all need to do things like this. They don't like it. They'll tell you to stop, but you have the right to do that. And, you know, we're going to see this a lot in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead, challenging what our rights are. Because the people in charge now have no clue as to what our rights are, and they don't care. They don't care to learn anything about our system, what citizens' rights are. So we are going to be tested an awful lot. We have to keep our cool, and we have to not back down. And I think that's kind of the theme. All right. Well, we had a little bit of a fun week, I think, down at the magazine, where this has never happened before. All right. We have all kinds of social media accounts, and we're generally very well behaved. We really are. We try to be model citizens online, all that. Got a little email from the folks over at, what do they call it now? X? Is that what the X, really? We're sticking with that? I call them Twitter. Does anybody mind if I keep calling them Twitter? Because, you know, you can't search for X. It's one letter. It's ridiculous. I don't know what
I do the same.
What's it supposed to mean? It makes no sense to me. Twitter. Come on. It's a good word. Mm-hmm. It's like, why would that? And you had the little bird and all. Okay. Whatever. So we got mail from them. And they said that our account had been locked. Our account had been locked for violation of something. And, it wasn't very specific in the mail what it was, but we, after a while, figured out it had to be the forwarding of the Doge mailing list. Doge being Department of Government Efficiency. That's the Elon Musk-run government agency, department, whatever you want to call it. Just his playground where he goes around and fires people left and right and breaks into computer systems, violates all our privacy, and is answerable to nobody except maybe Donald Trump, but we don't really know that for sure either. So apparently this had gained the ire of the folks over at Twitter because, well, they're both owned by Elon Musk. I guess, is it fair to say Doge is owned by Elon Musk? I mean, it's an agency, it's a department. We don't really know what it is, but it's certainly run by him. And it's just kind of odd that this list, which we didn't obtain ourselves, it was forwarded to us, and we were simply also letting people know it exists. That list, I lost my train of thought. We had gotten that list, and we simply forwarded it, and it basically showed how to get a hold of people at Doge. And I think it's the typing that's throwing me off. Whoever is typing this week, please stop. You're doing it all last week, and same thing this week. Yeah. So basically, the mailing list has names and email addresses. That's it. That's it. If you go online, you'll find almost every department. There's a page on the FCC. You can go online. You can search for employees. You get their name. You get their email address. You get their phone number. Not personal email address. Not personal phone number. In the office. And Doge is in the news quite a bit. And they're doing quite a lot of things that affect many, many people. Tens of thousands of federal employees, for instance. And no accountability. You know, for all the claims of transparency, we know very, very little about them. And in fact, when Wired revealed a list, a small list of Doge employees, Elon Musk himself threatened them, saying, "You've broken the law," which is an absurd statement because we have every right to know who is working for or against us in the federal government. These are federal employees, however you want to classify them. They are working for this agency that sprung up out of nowhere. So we had no problem spreading that around. And other social media networks, such as Blue Sky, Mastodon, they were forwarded there too. And basically, you know, a lot of people were able to become more informed. And that's kind of what we stand for. So we were a bit surprised to see that our account had been locked, and didn't know anything about how this whole process worked. So apparently, what you have to do when your account gets locked, you have to either appeal, which of course is what we did, or get rid of the offending material. Now, the odd thing about the latter is that the offending material was no longer there. They had already taken it away. So our removing it is impossible because it's not there. So we went ahead with the appeal. And of course, within a day, it was simply denied, no comment, anything like that. They basically concluded that we had posted personal information. We posted information that listed persons and listed those persons' email addresses at the federal agency or department or whatever it is. And that's it. That's it. Less information than you would find at virtually any other federal agency. So we did not consider that to be a problem. Elon Musk himself has doxed people on Twitter. Other people have posted all kinds of private information far more intrusive than a work email address, and absolutely no action was taken. So we spread the word about this, and as of today, we finally clicked that button and erased supposedly erased the list from existing on Twitter, even though it wasn't there. And in so doing, we gained our account back. And at that point, we issued a statement saying that all this had happened, and we don't believe that this was private information. We believe everybody has the right to see who the Doge employees are, to see their email addresses, to be able to write a concerned email if they need to. The same rights you have with anyone else. They're no different. And to protect that particular list from people like Elon Musk or anybody else that has a lot of power, we are hosting it ourselves. And that's that. You know, we have a new story up that has the links and all that. And that's what we are going to move ahead and do when we have information like this. It's very important that we stand up to bullying. And I think that's what we came face to face with over the past week. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, the fact of this list, because it is all over the internet. You know, thank you, Barbara Streisand. So it's not difficult to find now. But it is something that, yes, should be public knowledge, or at least publicly accessible. I mean, so many government records are accessible if you just ask for them. But, you know, as we've talked about, Doge is not a functioning public, you know, utility in any reasonable way. And the fact that the same person runs that and runs Twitter and can just decide they don't want it, I mean, it really puts yet another crack in the facade of Twitter being any sort of public square as it always purported to be since the old days. But it's very interesting how to see sort of the information in this. I think something very interesting about it, and this is something about the list, and I'm not going to name anyone's information, but Elon Musk is on here. I don't think that's much of a surprise, but there is this list of email addresses, and they all end in @doge.eop.gov.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about that, because eop.gov, what's that? If you bring it up on your web browser, it'll just redirect you to the White House website. And EOP is Executive Office of the President.
Mm-hmm.
The Executive Office of the President is basically the, you know, conglomeration of agencies and offices that keep the president's office going. So the addresses are at doge.eop.gov, which puts this as a subdomain of the Executive Office of the President. That's the authority they're all working under here. And that's the computer that they've gotten their email addresses assigned from, except for Elon himself. His email address on this list just ends in who.eop.gov, which I think would stand to reason that that would just be White House at the Executive Office of the President. So Elon himself has a White House email address.
White House at the Office of the President. It's kind of redundant,
yeah,
isn't it?
Well, so there are two people on this list who don't have doge.eop.gov
right.
emails. The other one being Susie Wiles.
There is another, yes. Now, who is she?
She's, I want to say, the chief of staff at the White House. And I don't know, this whole thing, and what is it, because of the type of role that he has, he's only allowed to work 150 days a year, but they're basically like, oh, he's only working one day a week. So the question I have about so many things is, even if what is happening is blatantly illegal and blatantly unconstitutional, and it's being ruled illegal and appealed against and all these things, but how do you make people do what they need to do when they're ignoring the legal system? How do we work around that?
Well, you know, I think one way is to annoy them by doing things by the rules, by refusing to back down and play their game, because that is what they're doing. They're playing a game. They're trying to change how everything works. And, you know, we're not going to give that up. We're not going to say that, oh, because, you know, you're going to strong arm us and tell us we're not allowed to have this information that's normally publicly available. We're just going to cave and buckle down. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to do it anyway. We're going to do it in your face, because the people have the right to know. And, you know, the fact that this is an organization, this is a government that claims to be transparent, that claims to be doing things in, you know, a more fair way, except if you express an opinion they don't agree with, or if you show some public information they don't want to share, then you become the problem. Well, we're ready to become the problem. I think we already are the problem. And it's an honor to be a problem to people like this. So, yeah. So it's on our site now. If you go to 2600.com, the top story will have the link in there. I'm not going to read it on the air because it's just too many letters and dashes and things like that. And I'd have to repeat it. And yeah, it's easier to do it that way. Go ahead, Rob.
I think another thing this illustrates very well is that the face of functional social media, where you can do things like report on information in the public interest, is vastly changing. You can put this on Blue Sky. You can put this on Mastodon. You can put this other places. Twitter, it's the property of somebody who, looking at this list, is an employee or a function of the White House. And so is Twitter now to be considered a branch of the U.S. government? I don't know.
Good question. And the interesting thing, the irony is that the people in Doge have accessed some of the most sensitive computer systems in the world. And we're told to just trust them, even though they're barely out of school, a lot of them. They're going to do the right thing. They couldn't even keep this list secure. This is an internal list that got out of their own people, that somebody either just left lying around, somebody shared it at some point. So forgive us if we don't just go along with that that statement. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of points here. We've talked about this numerous times with respect to platforms and social media in particular, but these are private companies, as Rob has indicated, and they have no obligation, Emmanuel, to keep your account active if they don't want to.
Correct.
They
yes.
can turn it off. They can edit and curate as they see fit. They kicked off Alex Jones before it was owned by Elon Musk, and he invited him back onto the platform, as I understand it. But we applauded that decision when it was kicking off somebody with whom we disagreed, who was spreading dangerous lies and information. And I remember I was arguing against that, saying, well, this is just bad overall when an account like this can be rugged, number one, and that I thought that, you know, the best bulwark against misinformation, disinformation, et cetera, and just absolute lies was the gray matter in between our heads. But this is just yet another indication that you cannot rely on these platforms. You can't rely on them. The power is so centralized in the hands of what appear to be one person who doesn't want certain information to be spread. And he sadly does have the right to just turn off whatever account you want. So you really have to call into question all of the information that you're seeing and whether all of that information is being curated by what appears to be a complete madman.
Now, if you take this same reasoning and you apply it to a different platform, let's say hypothetically there was a platform that was controlled not by the United States, but by a foreign adversary, you know, maybe a foreign power, and lots of Americans were on that platform, and this foreign power that was kind of dangerous and had ideas that were inimical to the ideals of America might be able to manipulate the information that Americans are seeing on that platform, you know, that could be seen as potentially a problem. Now imagine if it was China that was controlling this massive social media platform that Americans have signed on to. Right? That would be highly concerning. So the point I'm making here is, what's the difference now between TikTok and Twitter? Right? They're both controlled and curated by a party that cannot be trusted. All of that information on this platform now, I think, is suspect. Mm-hmm. The same reasoning that the government had used with respect to Twitter, TikTok, I think now applies to Twitter on the basis of this viewpoint discrimination and all of the information that we're seeing may be funneled through some kind of Doge-related lens. That's really, really scary to me. I totally lost track of my second point there, but it'll come back.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. I don't know why that is tonight. But you raise a very good point, and it also speaks to how we feel about our various Twitter accounts. We don't really care. We don't really care about them anymore. They exist. We know a lot of people are out there that still use it. We wish they didn't. We wish they would move, and we're encouraging them to move to different platforms. But right now, they still exist. But if they get a shutdown, all right, they have the right to do that, as you said, but we're not going to let them just push us out, not that easily anyway. But this connects to something else, another part of this story, because there are a lot of people who are very, very angry, and not angry at this so much, at what we're talking about, but angry at us. And I'm not talking about Doge people. I'm talking about people on Mastodon. Yeah, Mastodon, one of the alternate sites that we are encouraging people to go to. Apparently, this was forwarded to me after the story broke over the weekend that a lot of vindictive words were being sent our way, and it was a real surprise to me. It kind of baffling. Like, what are they so upset about? Apparently, they're upset that we haven't left Twitter yet. You know, completely and entirely, that we haven't deleted our accounts, that we haven't just never spoken their name again. And, you know, again, while I understand that's a choice that people have, I think you have to realize that that world does not yet exist. For instance, WBAI, we're still on Twitter. All right. ACLU, still on Twitter. The EFF, still on Twitter. Every single congressman on Twitter. You know, I want them all to be on Blue Sky and or Mastodon. I want that. And I'm, you know, pushing for that with, you know, every ounce of strength I have. And I hope other people are as well. And I know many people in our organization are doing that. But basically what I saw here, though, because I got forwarded a bunch of comments, kind of makes me sour to Mastodon, to be honest. I want to read you some of them. 2600 Magazine is actively pro-Nazi. Why are they on Twitter if not to support fascists with advertising money? Okay, that was from William. From George, sorry you can't enjoy the Nazi bar any longer. First of all, what I've noticed is a lot of these people use the phrase Nazi bar. You know, that is their term for what Twitter is. And, you know, it's a clever term, sure. It's not quite accurate, though. Because it's a lot bigger than that, and there are a lot of people on there who are good people. God, I sound like Trump. No, a lot of people who are not part of this at all just are using it to communicate. Some of them are very insular. They're just communicating with their friends, and they have no idea all the other crap that's going on out there. But, okay, let's continue, because some of these are... Wow, 2016, we were using a Nazi site several years after we should have been off of it and somehow hadn't already been banned by the Nazis. Look at little old us, the victims. you get a tone here where people are just kind of angry that we even are talking about Twitter at all, that we didn't just vacate it and have nothing to say about it. Let me tell you something. the way you find out what these people are saying is by watching what they're saying. And, you know, the way that you annoy them is by being in their face. You know, think of, and you know, calling everyone Nazis, you know, it's great when it applies. But calling everybody who drives a Tesla a Nazi, not quite accurate. Let's be honest about that. All right. But, you know, imagine the first round of fighting Nazis. If you weren't there, if you weren't in their backyard fighting them, how would that have gone? You know, you can't just run away into the distance and, you know, count your wounds and assume everything's going to work out. No, you have to fight. You have to witness. You have to relay information and get people out of there, too. Okay, what else? When the only content is content they decide can be seen by others, you cannot annoy them. When they don't like your content, they lock your account. They are not annoyed. They are in control. No, I don't disagree with that. Up until now, you've produced content they like, which means you are helpful to the Nazis. Okay, you took a real turn there. They have no knowledge what we are doing except when we annoy them. All right? They don't care. You're absolutely right about that. They don't care, which means they don't like what we post. We simply exist as a flea on a dog, if even that analogy works. Continuing here, if this is your level of understanding of where we are as a country, you're worse than useless. You're complicit in our destruction. This kind of hatred, this kind of way of speaking to people who are doing things a little differently than you, that is unhealthy. That is sick. That is something that we are trying to get away from, and you're just building it all up again. And the weird thing is, there was not one comment like this on Blue Sky. I don't know what the difference is, but people on Blue Sky aren't acting like this. People on Mastodon, my God, here's some more. Shame on you. When your bar becomes a Nazi bar, you should leave. You are on effing Twitter. F off. I can't go on. They just get really nasty, and I don't understand why. You know, we're talking about spreading a list of Doge information. Not one of those people is talking about that. And I think this underlines the problem that so many of us have, where we get caught up in our petty little battles amongst ourselves about what is the right way to resist, that we completely let the people who are the true threat get away with everything. So do not tell us we cannot be on a platform. We'll stay on that platform as long as we goddamn please. And we will never shame anybody if they're using a platform. Hell, I'll use Truth Social if I want to. In fact, I think I have an account on there somewhere, but I haven't logged in years. The point is, okay, the difference. We remain on Twitter because we built a huge group of people there, and a lot of them are still there. Truth Social was always polluted from the start, so there was never that community that formed. Here, there are still people, and we want those people not to be forgotten, not to be lost, to come with us to better platforms. We don't post on Twitter except to repeat what has already been posted on Blue Sky and Mastodon. We're not engaging on there because there are so many people filled with hate on the other side there. It's not worth it. I don't want to go the same way with Mastodon, but this kind of makes it seem like a foregone conclusion that is the road they're going to go down. I hope we can save it. Rob, go ahead.
So I'm going to a degree, disagree with you here. I think it is very interesting that these comments are happening on Mastodon. And I think one of the explanations for that is that a large amount of the population of Mastodon, in my estimation, are people who see Twitter as a problem that Mastodon solved. And centralized social media in general as a problem that Mastodon, ActivityPub, and the Fediverse in general have solved.
Well, that is a fantasy right there, because you ask the average person, do you have a Mastodon account? It's too complicated for them to get. You know, we have to walk them through it. And that is not solved. Yeah, it's a work in progress. But to say that, yeah, we solved that problem, no, you didn't. Twitter is still there. And people are having trouble getting onto Mastodon. They're flocking to Blue Sky because it's so much easier. And, you know, if you want to build something, let's build something. But this is not how you build something.
if I may finish, the problem has been solved for those people. And like, there are many people on Mastodon who that's their daily driver now. They're no longer on Twitter. They're frankly wondering why anyone else is. And I see that point of view. I also see your point. And I can only speak for myself. I, as an individual, had a long time presence on Twitter. It was a lot of fun back in the old days. And it was very useful in terms of spreading my work that I do, my creative work, the projects I'm involved with, including this program, and all that. And I had built up a great network and following and, you know, made some great friendships, kept up with people, and so on, the sorts of things you do on social media. But as Twitter got worse, and as Mastodon, which I had begun using, felt more and more comfortable and more like what I wanted social media to be, I started worrying, how many of these people on my Twitter followers list are there in part because of me? How many people are being exposed to the fire hose of crap that Twitter forces on every single user because they're interested in me? How many people are having the algorithm twist their minds in all the ways it's programmed to do because they're interested in what I'm doing? And eventually that became too much of an uncertainty for me. I deleted my Twitter. I deleted the Twitters for my various projects and moved basically fully into the Fediverse. And that works for me. I'm not saying it works for you. I'm not saying it works for 2600 as a publication. I'm not saying it works for this program, which still has a Twitter account and also a Mastodon account. Mm-hmm. And, you know, will continue to expand wherever social media becomes useful. But I can see why people are disappointed in learning that somebody they're interested in, somebody they, you know, want to believe is out there doing good work, that they're still on Twitter. I can see their point.
But you get it. It's a choice. I'm not condemning you for having that choice. You're not condemning me or the magazine for having a different choice. And it's not even, you know, we agree that it's a cesspool, that we just disagree on how to deal with the cesspool. And to basically tell somebody that they enable Nazis because they still have a Twitter account, I'm sorry. I don't see how you can justify that. That is worse than any algorithm. That's bullying. That's making people feel bad about themselves just because they don't think exactly like you. And if that's what Mastodon stands for, I'll go elsewhere because I don't want to be part of that kind of community. I know it's not. I know because there are a lot of people there that aren't saying that kind of thing. But you know what? They're not saying anything. They're being quiet because they're intimidated. And that's not healthy. Intimidating people is wrong. And that's what the lesson I thought we learned from Twitter. So let's not do the same damn thing again. Go ahead, Gila.
I think there's also something to be said. While I don't necessarily agree with the fact that people are sort of piling on, I do take exception to the fact that you keep talking about what Mastodon is, because I think the point that it is a decentralized system, you know, if Elon Musk says something, I almost said X, but that's, you know, if Elon Musk says it right now, that's what Twitter believes. That's what Twitter does. There is no Mr. Mastodon or Captain Mastodon that is going to say, this is what we believe and this is what we do. I do think that because of the decentralized nature of the system, there can be a slightly higher bar to entry. And because of that, people who have successfully gotten into that system and feel comfortable in it are in that kind of early adopter, hey, look at what I do, it's so cool, that I think can happen sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And I understand that it can be hurtful, but I don't necessarily think that people are saying that you are objectively a bad person or that the magazine is objectively for bad people. Well,
they absolutely are kind of
falling prey to the sense of internet hyperbole that we can all be kind of vulnerable to. But I would also say that, you know, I left Twitter because I found it increasingly unusable because of the proliferation of bot accounts, because, well, and also when, you know, the AI training on everything I was saying. I have really unique syntax. I don't want AI to have access to it. So I left.
That's fine. Yeah. And that works. That works.
Right. But I also don't think I'm super cool because I'm on Mastodon.
I'll tell you this though. Bernie Sanders is not posting on Mastodon. He's posting on Twitter. And I want to see what he says. And I want to hear what a lot of the idiots in Congress say as well. So I monitor what they say. And whenever they say something, there are a hell of a lot of people that attack what they say, too. But that's happening on Twitter. It's not happening on Mastodon. It's not happening on Blue Sky. I want it to, but we don't get there just by wishing for it. We don't get there just by condemning people who aren't, you know, on the same platform. So we need to figure out how to build this community. And I'm just pointing out this is not the way to build the community. Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, the reaction, it seems as though we are on a network that was designed for this. And a lot of the networks I think we've covered in the past, like Parler or Gab, those were actually designed for white nationalists and Nazis themselves who didn't like the policies and content moderation of places like Facebook and Twitter. And we're being treated as though because we're still on Twitter, which was not by design set up for that, we're being treated as though that's what we advocate for simply by association. And that's what's, I think, astounding in the chasm of logic here. It's so so backwards, but and missing the point of what we're actually saying and turning it into this side quest about self-righteousness on one platform or the other. And to my mind, it should be, and I think what we're doing is expanding the amount of places that we are. And of course, as people do leave Twitter, I'm sure it'd be open to eventually ending our contributions to that platform, especially if it's overridden with bots. But and hate groups and I guess that's what we're presuming it all is. But as E pointed out, like there are a lot of people that still persist there that feel like it's still their bar and that they can.
It's not a bar.
Yeah, no, it's a dumb way to put it, but it is this metaphor for keeping people that aren't desirable off of your platform, lest it become an undesirable platform. Well, a lot of the undesirability was outside of the control, and it's associated with the leadership, as Gila pointed out. And ultimately, it comes back to what I think Cory Doctorow pointed out a lot, and about Facebook and the switching costs and how that's by design. It's very hard to leave these communities that you've assembled based on your friends or your family. Well, oh, if I don't stay on this platform, I can't find out about those good recipes or whatever good things you got from it. Because your closeness to your network is there. Anyway, I'll just wrap up and say that that we as an organization have had many occurrences of our ability to distribute, our ability to share people who write for us, people who speak, to get the word out about what we're doing. We've had that attacked over and over and over again. It's something we're actually quite familiar with, not comfortable. I won't say it's a comfort zone, but it almost is. We're very familiar with having to rebuild anew, and the sense that we have to keep watching our presence on the internet, something that we're quite familiar with, be diminished by others, whether they're castigating us over our platform presence or over our politics or over some attitude someone expresses in their opinion piece or in a letter or something. It's really beside the point to us. We deserve to be able to be on these platforms like anybody else without some sort of repercussion, especially if you're missing the entirety of the point of the kinds of content that we are providing and the relative good we're trying to be on those on the internet itself.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Corey, because I was talking to Corey about this, and he informed me that there are people known as scolds on Mastodon. They're called scolds because they're constantly scolding people and being all self-righteous and all that. He got a lot of crap for writing an article that praised Blue Sky. They don't like that either. It's not just Twitter. It's anything that's not them. And I find that extremely unhealthy. And I'm going to say one other thing that's going to annoy the hell out of them. You know, when that day comes when, you know, Twitter is completely useless and we don't use it anymore, we're not deleting our account. You know, when you work for publications, when you work for radio stations, you save archives. You save the printed matter. You know, even if it makes you look bad, even if you make a mistake, that's what happened. All right. And we don't believe in just wiping it away because, you know, the times change. It's not 1984. We don't do that. All right. So we might abandon it ourselves, but our words will remain. So deal with that. Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, my position on this is I think, very consistent with what I've said about social media in the past. I think all social media, regardless of whether it's Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, whatever, I think it's a cesspit. I think it fosters the spread of misinformation and disinformation. I think it harbors a toxic culture. I think it creates toxic communities. I think even in Mastodon, as we're seeing, there are toxic communities. It permits and promotes harassment of individuals as well. It can negatively affect mental health of adults and children alike. And as we just discussed, you know, you're constantly exposed to curated content on the basis of somebody else's viewpoints or likes or whatever it is. I just think the whole thing is terrible, not to be trusted, and is going to be the undoing of mankind.
Go ahead, Rob.
I think due to the decentralized nature of Mastodon, we have all opened our email inboxes and found something in there we didn't like, whether it was spam, whether it was something actually mean and directed at us personally. But none of us got a mean email and then decided, well, this is what email thinks. I wonder if I want to be involved with email.
Yeah, but Rob, spam doesn't talk to spam, okay? Spam doesn't, you know, gang up on you. And that's what happens. You know, I had to tell people, get away from the term. We've been through this before, as Kyle said. We've gotten kind of good at it. And basically, you know, people who aren't good at it, they can be traumatized by this. They can be traumatized by people attacking them and accusing them of things. And, you know, for somebody who has not been doing this for years, somebody who's new to it, it is really something you don't want to expose them to. And that's why, you know, we need to speak out against it. Go ahead, Gila.
I would like to say something about some of the responses that came in. I was taking a look on Mastodon, and I have a very important thing to say about these responses, which is a friendly reminder that you do not use an apostrophe to pluralize. There is no apostrophe in the word Nazis.
Oh, boy.
Well, now I'm actually...
If it's a Nazi's possession... then you would use the apology, and if it's plural,
right,
after the S.
But if you're choosing to refer to everyone who's still using Twitter as a bunch of Nazis, there's not an apostrophe there. I am now officially taking issue with the people who have responded on Mastodon to this whole thing, and yes, now I'm upset.
Are you sure you want to get involved in this, Gila? Because they don't let go. They don't stop.
Well, just, again, remember, it's beside the point. It's just something we observed in the process of sharing about this takedown or whatever, this freeze action that we experienced. And others, I'm sure, are much more familiar with that. They transgress, shall I say, more frequently, or have been in the crosshairs of this kind of action a lot earlier than us. But this was... seemingly, I mean, quite a surprise in the context of what kind of information we were trying to share.
Yeah, because of that information, because this was an important story, and it got completely eclipsed by, oh, you're not using our platform. You know, it's like fighting over Linux or FreeBSD.
It's a side quest. It's so silly.
It's pointless.
Self-righteousness overflowing as a side quest, but... I just want to point out how much work it is to curate any of these accounts. It's work, and that is inherent with having to leave these platforms. Yes, Rob packed up shop, and he felt like, okay, I can't do this. That's within his right and ability, but mm-hmm. I'm sure the amount of connection or traffic or good virtuistic aspects of that platform that he lost in the process was a big deal, and it's not... can't go unnoticed, and we feel the same way.
First of all, I have to say that when I said it doesn't mean anything, I didn't mean Linux or FreeBSD. Obviously, they mean a lot. I wasn't. it was the battle I was talking about. I'm sorry if I offended anybody there. But, you know, the thing that we have to, and we have to conclude because we're out of time, oth@2600.com. We're continuing the conversation on YouTube, channel 2600 at 8 o'clock. And we'll be back next week at 7 p.m. on WBAI with a call-in segment. So that'll be fun. But basically, we just have to remember that people do things differently, and you cannot just blanketly label people. You cannot label the ACLU as Nazis because they're still on Twitter. You can't label the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, as Nazis because they're still on Twitter. The Auschwitz Museum, you know, there's so many entities and groups and organizations and people who still use it. And yes, the idea is to get them to use something better and to get away from the pollution that the place has turned to. But you don't get that by condemning people, mocking them, insulting them, or anything like that. We are out of time. So thank you, everybody, for the conversation. And please write to us again, oth@2600.com. Stay tuned for Overtime on YouTube. See you next week.
Not where it's at. You have no faith to lose, and you know it. I know the reason that you talk behind my back. I used to be among the crowd you're in with. Do you take me for such a fool? Say, how are you? Good luck, but you don't mean it. When you know as well as me, you'd rather see me paralyzed. Why don't you just come out once and scream it? No, I do not feel that good. The heartbreaks you embrace. If I was a master thief, perhaps I'd rob them. And though I know you're dissatisfied with your position and your place, don't you understand? It's not my. Not to draw. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't tell me to stop.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI in New York.